Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style. Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCAA
106.5
FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Oh, welcome back to the House of Mystery. We're at the interview part of the show. Joining us today is author Adam Stevens. Thank you for being here.
Oh, Alan, it's an absolute pleasure to be here. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Wow. So now you've written a lot of books, so you're into this big time. Where did this start for you, writing books?
Well, I'll tell you, I've had a very long and interesting life, and it's always been my grandmother that's encouraged me to write, and I've just ignored her. But in 1997... I just tragically wanted to end my life, and I actually reflected this in two of my books. I wanted to end my life. It was over for me. I was tired with the circular, destructive nature of my own personal life, and reflected that kind of in my personal writings. And I published this manuscript, and I published it to my family in 1997. Now, my grandmother loved it, but my parents basically disowned me. And at the time, you know, I had more respect for my grandmother than my parents anyway. So, I cherish the fact that the one cheerleader that I had enjoyed reading my story. And it's later, later in my life, I kept writing after that, never publishing, never knowing anything about Amazon, self-publishing, never knowing about, you know, how to send a book to a publisher. But I was in China teaching English as a foreign language at high school, and I read one of my students' papers, and it was a story about Amanda Hawking. I've never heard of Amanda Hawking before, but I read about her success in writing and self-publishing in Amazon. Now, I had plenty of free time teaching English as a foreign language, so I immediately went online and I did some research and realized that, wow, I now have an avenue of therapy to tell my story. And I fictionalized the harsh reality of my childhood and developed the character to be extremely addictive. And from that point on, I've attempted to evolve outside the book and allow the reader to surround themselves with all of the descriptive environment as the chronological story unfolds. And they don't just get a feeling for the character itself, they get the feeling for the environment around the character. And some people get it, and some people just don't get it. I don't say that I'm a gay romance writer. I write gay literature or gay fiction, but I write to an 18-plus erotic crowd because there's so many sexual scenes in my books. Now, I've learned to scale down that descriptiveness as much as I possibly could to prevent people from reporting the books as pornography. And you have to be real careful, and you have to walk a fine line when you're writing this type of book. And it's a very niche market. Male-male literature, gay literature, is becoming very, very popular. And I think it's more popular between middle-aged married women than gay men themselves. But I see a 90% purchase rate and friend requests and such from middle-aged married women. And I find that quite odd, but I find it rewarding at the same time because they can emotionally connect perhaps better than a gay male reading my stories.
Do you think that's why the females buy the books? Is it because of their connection to the emotional part of it?
I believe so, 100%, because this is hard to say because, you know, it's hard to say that men are not romantic and not emotional, especially being a gay male. I'm extremely emotional and extremely sensitive. However, women, especially middle-aged married women, are looking for a bit of a fantasy, a bit of an adventure. And I created my main character to basically be able to emotionally drive these women crazy by reaching out and touching every emotion that I can possibly create in each of the stories that I've written. And like you said, I have a very large library, and it evolves, kind of chronologically from a kid that wants to, you know, kill himself after the sixth book to, you know, where the happily ever afters really start to hit the books. And that's where book sales kind of started to pick up, was after the sixth book.
So, you know, if you don't mind me saying, I think that when you were starting to write, you were talking, it was kind of an outlet for how you were feeling about your life and not being happy. So that must have been very emotional. That must have been very, because it's very close to who you are, your heart and all that. So do you keep that in your writing even to this day?
Oh, yes. I've started, since the Rainbow Reader collection has pretty much ended, I've started a new series, my first book being In the Nick of Time, my current work in progress being just In the Nick of Time, and they're completely new characters, completely created out of my imagination for a combination of a love story and a little bit of paranormal experience where they experience and encounter what their souls are actually all about, and encounter a ghost that trains one of my characters, you know, how to embrace the powers that he has and things like that. I don't want to give too much away about that story yet, but as far as the Rainbow Reader series, yes, a developing story has, you know, has 15 books in it, and that can be completely intimidating to any reader. So I've placed a price point that the reader can actually purchase the first six books in a condensed version. All the books are there. It's just you can buy them all together for $9.99. And I see a lot of people reading, you know, a 600-page book as the book was originally intended to be published. Now, the Rainbow Reader series became what it is today because of this specific point. I wrote a 300-page novel. It was my very first book, and it was called Moments in Time, It's Never Too Late to Come Out. And it was published on Amazon, and on Goodreads and Amazon, I had over 40 positive, compelling reviews that inspired me to keep writing. And I was already on the Moments in Time, It's Never Too Late to Start Over, which was the book two in the series. However, one day, the book was blocked. My very first book was just gone. And I argued with Amazon, and I republished it, recovered it, didn't rename it, just recovered it and republished it. I did heavy, extensive editing, which added pages to the book, actually, and republished it. And then just a few short days later, that same book, Moments in Time, It's Never Too Late to Come Out, was deleted again. And this time, Amazon came out and said it was blocked for pornographic content. And I realized the publishing world was just not going to be for me. I basically gave up. And through some encouraging words from two authors that I've met, Cora Knight and Anne McCann, those were two women that had read my books, or read my book, and were blown away by my writing style. And it was a unique type of writing style. And so they really appreciated it and really encouraged me to separate the book, take out the first three chapters of the book. And so that's how the Rainbow Reader series actually began, was from a 300-page novel. Now, each Rainbow Reader is about 130 to 180 words, basically, they're all published individually. You can read these books alone, but most people start at the beginning, reading the Rainbow Reader Red Awakening, and then they evolve from book to book to book. And I absolutely love and thrive on reading their comments, whether they're good or bad. And there's not many bad reviews on any of my books. So I know I've got some type of talent, and that's why I keep writing for everyone.
Why? Well, you know, what is it that you want people to get out of your book? So when you're putting out these stories and you're trying to get this published and you have, you know, whatever going on, but what is it you're trying to get? What is it you're trying to say to people?
First, I would say that in the first six books of the Rainbow Reader series, I would love these books to be available to every high school teenager in their school library. And I would love every high school teenager to be to basically have these books as required reading. Now, obviously, I would have to edit these books intensively again to take out some of the more detailed sexual content, perhaps. But right now, you know, my writing is for 18 and older people that read male-male or gay literature. What I'm intending each reader to get out of the books is basically, first, the emotional connection with the main character, and to be so addicted to the main character's circular destructive series, where they're so emotionally involved in the books, they can't put them down. They can't wait for the next book. I've got a lot of Kindle Unlimited readers that, you know, will read through an entire series. I'll look on my Kindle Direct Publishing reports and see that somebody's read, you know, 3,000 words of my books, and I go to see which ones they've read, and, you know, they started with red and chronologically read on. I have a tagline, a phrase, that I pretty much put with any type of marketing that I do, and it's quote, read like you have never read before, unquote. And that tagline, I think, has inspired a lot of sales, because it doesn't mean read the book upside down or, you know, read the book in the shower, or close your eyes while you're reading the book. It just means that I have a unique writing style that will take them to places that most people, most readers would want to be taken in a book.
What do you consider your writing style then? Like, you talk about your unique writing style. What do you, how do you describe that?
I would have to say 100%, there's a difference between writers. Now, there's a difference between writing styles. Showing somebody what's happening in a scene and telling someone what's happening in a scene are two totally different writing styles. I read a lot of books that have the general basis of telling a story, a narrative story. But I like to get descriptive in the details. I want my readers to know the smells, the sounds, the sights, and especially deep down inside what a character is thinking that he's not actually saying, but is thinking. And that really hits an emotional spark in a lot of readers, because it's something that they don't expect in a book or a writing style. And several readers and several reviews have said that I have quite a purple prose that would give J.K. Rowling a run for her money. And purple prose meaning I use a lot of alliteration. I use a lot of different literary technical terms, you know, to each writing style. It's not something, something, something Nick said, something, something Tim said. You know, I get really, really into the minds of my characters, so that the reader knows what's going on. So I'm showing the reader what's going on rather than telling the reader what's going on. And I think that that is what would make me stand aside as an advanced type of writer. And I didn't start this correctly in my writing style. This has evolved over time since 1997. Since 1997, I've become college educated. I've been teaching English as a foreign language for many years. And so, I mean, English is a natural thing for me. I don't stumble for words. I have a very overactive imagination. I hear voices in my head that, you know, I could be laying down and just seconds from sleep, but I have to get up and get to the computer, because if I don't write it down, I'm totally going to forget about it. And those are the scenes that the readers really want to read.
That, you know, that's interesting. So your characters, where do they come from? Like, how do you create these characters? Are they completely fictionalized? Or is it from people you've met, maybe someone you've known, someone you see in a coffee shop or down the road or a shopping mall?
Yeah, I'm really, really glad that you asked that question. Alan, the best way to describe it is the first six books of the Rainbow Reader series were loosely based on my own personal life. And that's something that a lot of readers don't know. However, once I entered into the Moments in Time novels, there's three novels after the first six Rainbow Reader books. These three novels also draw a little bit less on my own personal life, even though some of the events actually happened. They influenced my writing and my writing style. However, the second part of the Rainbow series, which is, you know, another five books, those are pretty much completely imagination. I took different opportunities throughout developing my writing style thus far. And once the novels were complete and I brought it back to the Rainbow Readers, I decided that I needed to explain who some of these characters that I've written about are and explain how they fit in with the story. And it was magical for me because my mind would not shut down. I was constantly writing, and I had no free time. I was teaching English as a foreign language, grading papers, or writing. There was no other time in my life. And sometimes my writing took priority over my school responsibilities. In other words, I'd be waking up late, making my coffee, running to class with my coffee, and teaching, and then going off in between breaks and, you know, typing away. But, you know, my readers also inspire me. Based on their reviews of what they're looking for, that's how I would focus the next book, because they had questions. They needed the answers. And so characters were created that really defined what the books that had been written about so far were really all about.
Sounds like a lot of your characters, a lot of it is working out some of your own details of your own life.
Well, I've got a lot of things that have happened to me, as I said already, in my life. And I've been so many places and had so many adventures that that I could just write forever. But being honest about my writing is very, very important to me. So that's why most of my ideas come from my own personal experiences in life. although fictionalized, it's an outlet for sharing all of my personal innermost releases of pent-up imagination, I guess you would say. So it's a way to express myself through the desires of what the readers are actually looking for.
So what do you think, what about your writing that gives problems with the publishing of it? Like, is it just too descriptive in the sexual encounters, or do you think it's more because it's with men?
I think I've scaled back, given up, being able to give enough descriptive writing in each book that I've written. It was only the first book that somebody obviously just didn't like, because it included my characters, the first three chapters of the book, the original book, which now are the six Rainbow Readers. One person just obviously didn't like that.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
That book and had reported it, and it was deleted and deleted the second time after editing. So what I did is I left those three chapters out of The Rainbow Reader Red, and I named that book. It's actually available. Some readers want to read it. It's called Pink, The Secret Manuscript. And it's not available digitally because they would, Amazon would just, you know, block that book. But it is available in paperback. And it's priced a little high. It's priced at $99.99. The reason why it's priced so high is that all the proceeds for the sales of the Rainbow Reader books, the first six books, first six books, plus Pink, obviously, are all a fundraiser for the Homeless Youth Ranch. Now, once you get through the first six books, you get through the next three novels, you start learning about what the Homeless Youth Ranch is all about. And it's an actual personal dream that I have that I believe that I was put on this earth to achieve. But in the books, starting after the three novels, starting with the Rainbow Reader White, it begins to talk about what the Homeless Youth Ranch is. And it basically goes into why the Homeless Youth Ranch is important, where these kids are coming from, and in three books, Gray, the Rainbow Reader Gray, Rainbow Reader Black, and the Rainbow Reader Brown, those three books articulate specifically how the Homeless Youth Ranch was formed. Now, of course, I haven't formed this yet because this is still fictional, but it shows in a fictional setting what can be done and how the homeless youth need to be helped. And I'll just tell you a personal story that happened to me very recently, which is a point in all three of these books. Just recently, I just finished up at a doctor, and I was in an Uber, and I convinced the Uber driver to take me to Starbucks. So he got onto my cell phone, and I made a mobile order to that Starbucks, and we pulled into the Starbucks right at the main door. I noticed this boy, didn't know how old he was, because his knees were bent up and his arms were around his knees and his head was, down in his lap area. So he was, hunched over in a corner. And it was cold. It was about 57 degrees outside and he wasn't dressed for it. I saw a shopping cart. I'm starting to cheer up already. I saw a shopping cart of three huge trash bags full of bottles and cans that I'm sure he was waiting for the recycling center to open at 10 o'clock in the morning, which was just, a few minutes away. I went inside, and I was waiting for my mobile order, and it wasn't ready yet, and all I could think about was this kid. I've got to do something for this kid. Now, if I had my own car, I'd go find him help. I'd go check him into a hotel room. I'd go do anything I could for this kid, get him, social services help if he wanted social services help. For example, he may have run away from his family because of any reason. He could have came out as being gay and his family turned against him. And that's very common. He could have come from a foster home and the foster, parents beat him. Any one of these reasons, I would have loved to have time to sit down and talk to him and find out why is he sitting on the street. Finally, my mobile order was ready. I looked in my wallet, and all I had was a $20 bill, and that was fine. But that was my last $20 for the entire month. And so I went outside. I tapped the boy on his shoulder. He raised his head up. It was tear-stained and dirty, and he smelled. I could smell his smell. And I said, here, it's not much, but this is for you. Now, my $20 that I gave him was probably more than the bottles and cans that he had in his cart, but he just said two things to me. He said, thank you, and God bless you. And I basically, Alan, he touched my heart. what is a 15-year-old doing or 16-year-old doing out in the street homeless? It shouldn't happen. But I got into the Uber, and the lady said, what was that all about? And I said, well, he's obviously homeless, and, you know, he needed some money, and I gave him the only $20 that I had. And she says, oh, you are a saint. And I said, yeah, I wish I could do more for him. And that's what we talked about on the whole rest of the ride home, was the homeless youth ranch and how that's my dream. So a lot of people don't know this, and it's something that I've been meaning to do, is go back into the first Rainbow Reader, the Rainbow Reader Red, and, you know, put a prequel to that book that explains that, you know, the purchase of each of these Rainbow Reader books go directly to the Homeless Youth Ranch. And it's something I'm seriously considering now.
Well, that's great. So where do you see yourself going with the writing? It looks like you kind of have a direction and you kind of have an idea. So where do you see this heading?
Oh, do I ever have an idea? Again, being able to express my innermost thoughts and desires, I'm having a blast writing my current work in progress. Now, my book, In the Nick of Time, is about two college students, Nick and Tim. That's a little metaphor with the book title, In the Nick of Time. And that story was just an amazing adventure to write, because I didn't pull on any specific memory from my own life. It was completely generated by my imagination, like I told you already, falling asleep and, you know, just getting to that dream state, and I've got six pages in my head that have to be written, because I don't want to waste those six pages. And I would get to the computer, I would wake up and, you know, get to the computer, force myself to wake up even, get to the computer and, you know, start hacking away at the keyboard. And that's what stimulates me, is when I have the voices in my head telling me what to write, it gives me extreme pleasure to be able to take that information and elaborate on it even more. It gives me a focus and a direction and it seems like in The Nick of Time, the first book of this new series, it seems like a totally different me, because I transition each chapter from one phase of the character's life to the next phase of the character's life, and how they interact and how they intermingle. And then it gets even better. The current works in progress that I'm having right now, this writing is so creative, because even though I just touched on the paranormal in the first book, I'm all over it in the second book. Nick, after a summer of house sitting for his uncle at this big, huge old manor in the middle of nowhere, basically, Nick and Tim are back at college, and Nick isn't spending as much time as Tim needs him to spend with him. And so, I'll just spill the beans. Alistair, who's actually a ghost that used to live in this house, or this manor, as I call it, Alistair actually travels through mirrors as a ghost and visits Nick every day at college or at university. And every day, he is sharing something new about Nick's life. And Nick has a soul. Everybody has a soul. But Nick has a soul that's a venerable soul, meaning his soul can move to the previous body that soul had been in. And Nick could travel back as far as when the Phoenicians were in what's now called Upper Michigan, looking for copper for the pharaohs. Nick could travel to the person who was the innkeeper that turned away a man from Bethlehem and his wife who were in town to pay their taxes, being Joseph and Mary, and, suggested out of Nick's good nature that they could go sleep in the stable. And, so Nick has been back and forth, through time, if you will. And it's becoming a very interesting story because the storyline continues from the first book about this summer, the manor is being turned into a very exclusive bed and breakfast and is not only just being watched by Nick and Tim, but has staff, has a cook, has a housekeeper, has two cowboys working on the ranch. And, it's two stories in one. But they're combined, and it's been fascinating to write, and it inspires me, but I can't say that I've ever been stuck for something to write. I mean, I'm just pushing 100,000 words right now and just pushing 400 pages. So I don't know where I'm going to go with this, but because I've still got four more chapters to write. So this is going to be a pretty lengthy book.
Well, it's I think that you're very attached to your writing and your characters. How do things around you affect your writing? So, like this year with all the the COVID and all the issues happening in the country, it must seep into your writing. Do you find that it does?
I'll be honest with you, Alan. Since President Trump announced on March 14th, I guess last to this year, I have not been very active on Facebook and not written one word until August. I was very, very, I don't know how to put it. Very, very scared. I remained very isolated, which meant it would have given me plenty of time to write, but I had no ability to write. It wasn't a writer's block. It was more of my mind was in a panic. Anything could happen at any time. The economy could just drop. Oh my God, there's a coin shortage. How could there be a coin shortage? Just print more coins. just stressing over the COVID. And then in midsummer, a tragedy happened, an extreme tragedy. In mid-June, my dog started acting very unusual. Now, we had been in an accident. We were hit behind in a tragic accident where we were both injured. She ended up getting a collapsing trachea, and I have a myriad of disabilities. And I took her to the vet, telling the doctor that, you know, she's got some problems, and they looked at her, and they said, well, it's just like I said before. They took some x-rays. Just like I said before, she has a collapsing trachea, but the trachea is almost so closed, I'm starting to tear up again, that she's having difficulty breathing. I can prescribe her some drugs to make her feel better, but I don't have much hope. I can try to perform surgery on her and replace that part of the trachea, but this could be a $5,000 to $7,000 surgery. And I said, I love my dog so much. She's 13 years old, but I don't have that money or access to that money whatsoever. So he says, well, the drugs will help her, you know, the best that she can, or that they can. 10 days later, with my poor dog, just I'm seeing her wither away and cuddle up with me, you know, as much as she possibly can. I finally decided that it was time for her to, you know, be put down. And I called the vet's office, and they said they, you know, could take her today. And I brought her in. She sat on my lap and just licking my face. I'm just in tears. You know, I can't see the end of my love, you know, for 13 years. I can't see that ending. And, you know, a few minutes later when the vet came in, he says, here's the 3 shots. By the 3rd shot, she'll have about 1 second left, and then it'll be over, so it's time to say goodbyes. And, you know, he said, here's shot 1, here's shot 2, you got about 1 second, here's shot 3. And I felt her last breath, on, you know, from her stomach, and then that was it. She was just limp. I was holding her in my arms. And that's probably, you know, everybody says 2020 has been the worst year of their life, but, you know, I can relate to that. July 1st, you know, my baby and my love died. But since then, my depression just skyrocketed. I didn't want to do anything. I didn't even want to eat. And in August, I decided that the best therapy that I could do is to start writing book 2 of this series, which is just in the nick of time. It's about Justin, Nick, and Tim. And that therapy, even though I talk to Morgan, my dog, you know, every day, that therapy has been extremely good for me. That's why I'm nearly to 100,000 words since, you know, August. And that's a lot of words for a writer to write. I've gone through the book several times, you know, and done a complete reread. I do have an editor that's in Australia. Her name is Anne McCann, and she's been outstanding editing all of my works. She'll even offer suggestions of, you know, you made this mention earlier in the book. Do you want to maintain, you know, the same meaning and such? So she's a great person to work with. But I just think that the entire COVID time from March until August, I did nothing but just waste time with my anxiety so high. Starting in August, though, I've been riding up a storm, and it's changed my outlook on life because it's given me a purpose again. And I think that's what actually inspired me to write back in the beginning was this was actually giving me therapy. It was giving me a purpose, something to do more than just day-to-day life responsibilities. It was, this is my purpose, is to write, to entertain people, and to give them a story that they can deeply, emotionally relate with. And hopefully this new series is going to be really popular.
Yeah, I hope it does well. Now, do you have a website, or do you have a place that you prefer people to go if they want to find out more about you and your writing?
I don't have a website. I haven't kept that up. But I do have my Amazon profile page. So basically, if you go into Amazon and search for Adam Stevens, you'll see, all my Rainbow Reader books come up that say Adam Stevens on it, and you'll see my author page come up probably first. There is another Adam Stevens out there who's a race car driver. That's not me. That's the best way to find out who I am, and it explains more about my history, why I write, and with the Amazon author central page, you can actually see all of my works. You can see all the things that I've blogged, and you can see, you can click on each book and see the reviews that other people have left on the book. So I really appreciate this type of service from Amazon. I can also be reached and seen on Goodreads. A lot of people don't review their books on Amazon. They only review their books on Goodreads. And I find that unusual, but I'm happy that they review the books, period.
Prepared? Legacy Food Storage. The best way to protect your family is by being prepared. Go now to legacyfoodstorage.com. Use coupon code HOM15 now for 15% off. Quick, go!
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
The mission has been completed.
The end!
By George, he's got it! It is the end!
I'll see you.
If you're lying to me, I'll be back.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.